Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on VBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. 50 years of funk, originating from Flint, Michigan in 1969. This top-selling American rock group of the 70s is coming to your town to help you party it down. Grand Funk Railroad is extremely excited to be touring in 2019, marking a 50-year milestone. After playing to millions of fans on the band's tours from 1996 to 2018, Grand Funk's 2019 American Band Tour will continue to reach both new and longtime fans. Known as the American Band, the high-energy five-piece group will play 40 shows all over the USA this year. Grand Funk Railroad includes original founding members Don Brewer on vocals and drums. He's also a writer, singer of the multi-million selling hit We're an American Band, and bassist Mel Shocker, the God of Thunder. Joining Don and Mel are true all-stars. Singer Max Carl is a rock veteran from 38 Special. Max penned and sang 38's biggest hit, Second Chance, and was co-founder of California's legendary Jack Mack and The Heart Attack. Don refers to Max as the best blue-eyed soul singer on the planet. Lead guitarist Bruce Kulick, who we had the pleasure of interviewing, is also best known for his 12 years with Kiss and has credits with Michael Bolton, Meatloaf, and Billy Squire. Kiss members Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley were influenced early on by Grand Funk. Keyboardist Tim Cashin has a master's degree in music from the University of Miami, affectionately called Dr. Tim. His credits include stints with Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band and English soul man Robert Palmer. Internationally acclaimed, Grand Funk has toured the world, selling out in the U.S., Canada, Europe, Japan, and South America. A 1971 performance at New York's Shea Stadium sold out faster than the Beatles. The group's widespread appeal is also evident in its prestigious recording achievements. Over their career, Grand Funk has had 19 charted singles, 8 top 40 hits, and 2 number 1 singles. We're an American Band and Locomotion both selling more than 1 million each. The group has now accumulated 13 gold and 10 platinum records with record sales exceeding 25 million copies sold worldwide. The most recent gold CD award was presented to the band for their greatest hits package, Grand Funk Railroad, the Collector's Series. Grand Funk's 2018 tour was a huge success, and now with the group's 2019 American Band Tour, seasoned Grand Funk lovers and contemporary rock fans discovering the group for the first time will be able to celebrate 50 years of funk with Grand Funk Railroad. Please welcome drummer, singer, and songwriter for classic rock legends Grand Funk Railroad, Don Brewer, to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Don!
How you doing, Ray?
Good, man.
Well, I don't think we need to do any more. You just said it all.
I think we're done. you got such a illustrious career, and it goes on for, since 1969 or maybe a little bit before that. It's hard to get it all in.
Well, it is. There was the pack, and Terry Knight and the Pack, that preceded Grand Funk Railroad. That would take me back to when I was, my first band was the Red Devils. That would have been when I was 13 years old. So, I hate to think that I have memories to go back that far, but I do. Wow.
You know, Terry Knight and the Pack, I know Terry Knight was a weird, type of scenario that happened to the band. He was all good and then bad, and, there was lots of question marks there. But, they did have one big hit, which was I Who Have Nothing, which,
Yeah, the old Benny King song, right.
Yeah, and which went on to, so many people recorded it. I remember Tom Jones, seeing Tom Jones in concert. Shirley Bassey sang it. But you guys made it a hit.
We had a hit on it, yeah. And, there were a couple other ones. There were minor hits. We did a cover of Mr. You're a Better Man Than I by the old Yardbirds thing, there were a couple others. But back then, you could have regional hits, where you'd have a hit in one state or two states or three states, and it wouldn't really break out all over the country. It was a great time period for that kind of thing. It really showed a lot of diversity in the country about the different tastes in music. You'd have a certain kind of hits in California, a certain kind of hits on the East Coast in New York, certain kind of hits in the Midwest, it all became, homogenized, and later on. Now it's, it's global. The homogenization has gone global.
Michigan's always been known as, the land of garage bands, and there's so many great bands. I've had, I know Susie Quattro, we've interviewed her a couple times, and Peter Rivera from Rare Earth. So many. I always thought the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame should have been in Michigan.
it would have been more appropriate, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah. You got Motown. I mean, come on.
Yeah, who came out of Cleveland anyway?
Exactly. That's what I want to know. Did you guys actually play in a garage at one time?
Well, not really in a garage. Actually, I started my first band, which turned into this band. Actually, the band I started was the Red Devils, and that became the Jazz Masters, and that became the Pack, and then that became Terry Knight and the Pack, and then that became Grand Funk Railroad. And it all started in my basement at 5028 Fairchild Street, Swartz Creek, Michigan.
Wow.
and it's still there. The house is still there. We used to, we play in the basement, and people up and down the street could hear us practicing and stuff. And then there were times that we'd set up out in the backyard and make a lot of noise, playing out in the backyard. But I don't ever recall actually playing in a garage. that is where a lot of bands were born, though, was in garages, because the parents wouldn't let them play in the house.
That's right. Wouldn't it be so cool, though, to have those recordings, that you played, in the backyard and all that stuff back in the neighborhood?
It'd be awesome if we didn't have recording back then, any recording technique back then. There was no way to record anything.
Yeah, I remember I was in electronics since I was a kid. My dad had retail electronics stores in D.C. and in Baltimore, and I grew up with the reel-to-reel tape recorder and the transistor radio, and I remember the Craig 212, I think it was, portable reel-to-reel, and I think that was had pretty good quality.
Sure.
I saw Grand Funk Railroad back in 1974, and I think it was a Shining On tour. I think Wet Willie opened for you guys. You guys were selling out. This was the Capitol Center in D.C. 20,000 was no problem for you guys. Then I saw you, which was a big surprise, at the Orlando Calling Festival. And you were there with Bob Seger, which was really cool.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, are you going to play with Bob on this farewell tour at all?
No, he's been touring now. He actually started this tour back in 2017, and then he had a neck problem and he had to go in for surgery, emergency surgery. And they called me to go on that tour, and I was just too busy with Grand Funk. I could not do it. They got a different guy and they got a great guy out of Nashville was playing drums for him. And so, I'm not doing that. We actually are doing some shows as Grand Funk Railroad with a special guest with Bob Seger, the Silver Bullet Band, on this tour. We did five, so far, and we're going to do three or four more. So that's a great evening of rock too. I got to tell you, that's a lot of hits.
Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know you guys were playing with Bob Seger. That's awesome.
Yeah.
They should get all the existing Michigan bands together. That'd be awesome. And just tour. That'd be awesome.
There were, you know, a number of years ago, I talked with one of Seger's managers about, you know, doing something where you do, you know, outdoors someplace, do like a Bob Seger, Ted Nugent, Grand Funk Railroad show. I think that would be a great day, great evening. But I think the time has passed.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There's still a lot of people out there that are, you know, really hungry for that music, you know? That really
is. Oh, sure, yeah.
That's why they have these, you know, like Ringo's All-Stars and Hippie Fest shows and, you know, the Happy Together Tour and all that stuff. Those guys always sell out wherever they go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the reason that we're still touring as well. You know, there is a demand for the music. A lot of the bands are really good. It's not like they're, you know, on their last legs and they shouldn't be touring anymore. So, you know, and the music is timeless. It really has become timeless, and there's nothing that's being created now to replace it.
Well, I'm glad it's you and Mel. You got some great all-stars in there. Bruce is a great guy. He's, you know, really talented guy. I know Mark's not there, but there's a lot of bands out there that, you know, they don't even have an original member of the band anymore, you know, and they're still selling out.
Yeah, sure.
That's a little too much for me.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, Foreigner is one of the bands now that has become that. And, you know, Mick Jones is not always there. And if he's not there, there's absolutely nobody left original in the band, you know, which is, you know, but they still put on a great show.
Well, I talked to Lou Graham about that. He caught some of the current band members talking about when they were making the old hits and writing the old hits. He said, "What are you talking about? You weren't even there, you know?" He was a little upset about that.
Oh, yeah.
We're an American band. You guys, I know you talked about this a million times, about the inception of the song and everything. How about the lyrics? Was that based on maybe a certain tour, or was that kind of a combination of a bunch of shows you did?
No, it was actually, you know, all based on the tour that was right prior to putting We're an American Band out, which was called the Phoenix Tour. We did an album called Phoenix and recorded it down in Nashville, and we put together this tour, went out, and we were playing all over the country, and Terry Knight was suing every city we were playing in, and along the way, you know, we got Freddie King, the great blues guitar player, to be our opening act, you know, so ended up playing cards and playing poker with Freddie at night. And, the Four Young Chiquitas in Omaha, you know, that was a true story. And Sweet Sweet Connie and Little Rock. You know, so yeah, so all of the things were happening from the Phoenix Tour, which was 1972, I do believe. You know, everything went in, you know, and plus I only played three or four chords on a guitar, and all three or four chords are in that song. There they are. So I wrote the song around those chords. That's it.
Well, I got so many good memories from that song. I was actually in high school. I was a senior in high school when that song came out. And those were good times, man. And that was a great year for music as well.
It was. You know, I mean, it was a major transition, actually, for music, because FM radio prior to that time had been FM underground, where the jocks could, you know, bring albums and bring their whole record collection and play anything they wanted to for the 4 or 5 hours they were on the air. And then all of a sudden all of this stuff was changing, and all the songs had to be commercial, and they had to be, you know, no more than three or four minutes long. And there were managers and people at the radio stations that were telling the jocks, you have to play this, you have to play these songs, and so many times per hour, you know, and it was all changing at that time.
Well, I was one of those jocks back in 79. I was a top 40 guy, and you know, I mean, it wasn't too bad. They let me go out of the box, you know, a bunch of times. The thing that really killed radio, though, is the commercials. You know, we had a rule when I was in broadcasting school. You could only play 3 commercials in a row, because after that you're going to lose your audience. And now it's like, you know, what was I listening to? You know, it's gotten ridiculous. You know,
yeah.
Well, back.
It's like trying to watch a football game. You know, I mean,
exactly.
What team was I watching? I forget now. I mean, yeah.
It's exactly right.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the end of the year top 100 Billboard for 1973. Now, these are the top 100 for 1973, the end of the year. Now, I know Where an American Band was at the top of the charts, you know, and held that position for a long time and everything. But it finished in 23 place out of 100 for the end of the year, beating out Deep Purple and Smoke on the Water. That's pretty good.
well, it should.
Because that was another big hit from 73 that everybody remembers, you know? Excuse me. And then, of course, Frankenstein was another, you know, big hit, you know, part of that, that scene back then in 1973. I wanted to ask you too about Flint, Michigan. Is Flint coming back? I heard some rumors that it was kind of coming back a little bit.
Well, you know, my family lives up there, and I've been going up there every year almost for the past 30 plus years and 40 plus years, and it got really bad. It started to turn around. You know, the factories all closed up and left, and very little of the factory presence there that used to be there. But it's, you know, it never really went away.
Right.
The town never went away. I'm not exactly sure what kept it going all of these years, but it didn't. And they're still struggling. You know, they went through the water crisis that they had, where somebody, you know, was stupid enough to think they could switch over to the Flint water, Flint River water, and that just was a totally disastrous idea. And but anyway, it's doing okay. I wouldn't say it's making a major comeback.
Yeah, I've got a lot of friends from Michigan because, you know, Sarasota's full of, was it Michiganians?
Michiganders.
Okay. we got a lot of those guys down here.
Yeah, a lot of people, a lot of people escape those winters, that's for sure.
And, I mean, it's a great town. You know, I've been in Detroit. You know, I've been to Farmington Hills is a nice area, too. I really enjoy that area as well. But I hope it really comes back. Yeah, Peter Rivera did a song about that. Did you ever hear his song, Look What We've Done?
No, I haven't.
If you get a chance, look at it on YouTube. It's all about Michigan and that whole area and, you know, what has happened there. And, it's a great song, what he did about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to get right down to the basics about all of that stuff, it's the whole auto industry deal in Michigan. That was the driving force in Michigan, and
right.
And really the unions destroyed that situation. They forced the companies to have to move those jobs out of state and out of the country, actually, by making demands for standing in a factory, screwing bolts on a nut, or screwing nuts on a bolt. And then it became automated, and so forth and so on. And it just, they really priced themselves out of the market, and that's what ruined that whole situation. I don't know if it'll ever come back, Trump has said he's trying to make those auto jobs come back to the United States. I don't know if it's possible, really.
It's a real, everything's automated nowadays, too, and it's going to get even, I heard now they're thinking about getting robots now for umpires in baseball. Which is not a bad idea. I'm for that.
Yeah, I mean, and then you have these deals with this airplane deal with the 737 MAX, where it's something is overriding the pilot controlling the airplane and making the thing crash.
That's crazy.
It could be getting too far. Could be going too far.
Well, I think what made America great are the factories. I mean, they had the benefits.
Sure.
They had a steady job. I wish I would love to see that come back. That'd be good for America and make more things here in the United States instead of outsourcing everything.
Oh, absolutely. It's just it really just comes down to dollars and cents. And what people are willing to take for those jobs. Like I say, I think the unions priced all of those workers out of the market.
Yeah,
by making way too high demands for the kind of a job it was, and you could find people in other countries who will do those jobs for next to nothing. So, there you go.
I know. It's not the same quality, though. I think, you know,
No.
Yeah, not at all. But being in electronics, you know, I saw a big change, too. I mean, Japan was the king. We had some great products, Sony, Sanyo, Panasonic, Iowa, you know. And then one day, they were all made in Korea. And that changed the electronics business, too. You know, and now, you know, there's no need for electronic stores because everything's on your phone. You know, all that's gone. Videos, everything's on your phone nowadays. Your parents were teachers.
Both of them. Yeah. It made it tough for me.
Exactly. I was going to ask you about that. How was it growing up with two parents?
My mother was an English teacher, you know, so it was tough, and she had quite a reputation too. I luckily was never back then they wouldn't let the children of teachers be in the class of the person teaching.
Right.
So I was in other classes, but I heard about my mother. I mean, she was a tyrant.
Oh man.
So I'm glad I didn't have to, you know, be in school with her, but I had her at home.
Yeah, I know. You better do your homework or else.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my daughter's an English teacher and her husband's a teacher as well. So yeah. I know where you're coming from there.
Yeah. Well, it's a great profession. You know, it offered a lot of, you know, job stability and the retirement fund, you know, was incredible, and the medical insurance was incredible. All of that stuff, the benefits were great.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming they still are, you know, I don't know, but I think it's tough. It's a lot tougher now, I think, to control kids in those classrooms than it was back when my mother was teaching, because when my mother was teaching, you know, she was allowed to be a tyrant and keep everybody in line, and they're not allowed to do that anymore, you know.
Yeah, there's a fine line now. You've really got to be careful. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the professions that I think are underrated are teachers and nurses. My wife was a nurse for like 40 years, and, you know, God bless them both, you know.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Your gig, Grand Funk's gig at the Atlanta Pop Festival, I know that led to your first record contract back in 1969. You had an estimated 180,000 rock fans at Atlanta International Speedway, two-day event. I heard on the way to the festival, your U-Haul carrying all the equipment flipped over.
Yes, it did. We got on that show as a favor to a friend. You know, I mean, nobody ever heard of Grand Funk Railroad before. We just started a new band in Michigan, and we weren't getting gigs because nobody knew what Grand Funk was. And so our agent, G. Pollen, got a call from a friend of his that was working in the Atlanta Pop Festival and said, hey, I can get your new band on the show down here, but we aren't going to pay him anything. You know, and we aren't going to give him any expense money, or anything. They can get down here and go on. That's it. So we borrowed a van and rented a trailer, and off we went to Atlanta, Georgia, from Michigan. And on the way, I think it was around Knoxville, Tennessee, we're making a turn on the freeway. The tire came off the U-Haul, and the trailer rolled. there was our equipment all over the freeway, all over the place. So we, you know, we were lucky. We loaded it back on. A truck driver stopped and helped get us to the next exit, you know, where we could get the trailer worked on and get the tire put back on. And so we made it. We made it to that show and walked on opening day of the Atlanta Pop Festival. Nobody's ever heard of Grand Funk Railroad. And by the end of the show, they gave us a standing ovation. And that was the kickoff right there.
What a story, though, for your first big gig. None of the
others. This can't be happening.
So you guys must have been in panic mode.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it was meant to be.
Yeah. That's incredible. And of course, Shea Stadium. I did talk to Mark Farner about this. I know Mark a couple of times, and he comes to Florida a lot. Selling out Shea Stadium faster than the Beatles. You know, he was telling me when you guys were in the helicopter looking down, and of course, Humble Pie opened for you guys. You guys were friends with Peter Frampton, and the goosebumps you got just, you know, circling the stadium, seeing all those people. That was incredible. And you, if anybody, they should all go on YouTube and see that some of that footage. I wish they had a whole tape of the whole concert, man. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, there is a whole movie that was put together that has never seen the light of day. But yeah,
really?
It's extraordinary. And, you know, yes, it was. It was definitely a pinch me, is this real rock and roll moment, you know, because this can't be happening to us. This little band from Flint, Michigan is playing Shea Stadium, you know, and it's just, it was truly amazing. It was unbelievable, you know, and when I see that footage today, it all comes back to me.
What a night. What a night. I mean, the audience was so in tune to the music. I've never seen anything like it. You know, I mean, the whole stadium was rocking.
The whole stadium was rocking, yep.
Don, do you have a good rock and roll story? I know there's a lot of them, and most of them are in, we're an American band.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There's none that I can tell.
did you put out a book?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
I have not put out a book. No, that's yet to come.
Oh, you need to put out a book.
and the people are going to be really sorry when I put out that book.
Really? We just want to hear the juicy stuff, man.
There you go, yeah.
I also hear you have, you do a lot of work with animal rescue, and I actually just talked to Loretta Swit from MASH. She's very big on animals. She's got all these different places that, you know, you can donate to help the animals and everything. Talk a little bit about your animal rescue.
Yeah, my wife and I have been involved. My wife is a former radio personality down here in West Palm Beach, and for years and years and years we've been involved with a place here in Jupiter called Safe Harbor, which is a no-kill animal facility, and we've, you know, done a lot of benefits for them and done a lot of volunteer work for them, and so we got involved doing that kind of stuff then, you know, and since then, you know, my wife has rescued, you know, cats and all kinds of animals, and she's got a little ranch, and she's helping the horses and, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, we just have a feel for animals and their, you know, most people don't treat animals the way they should be treated, you know, and so I think the animal people are one of a kind, you know, and so, you know, it's nice to help out man's best friend, whenever you can.
You know, I look at a lot of those YouTube videos of animals hugging people and just, you know, it brings tears to your eyes, you know, you know, they're like humans. They all have feelings, you know, just like we do, you know.
Sometimes better than humans.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That, does she have animals on her ranch or on her property?
On her property, yeah, she does, yeah. And she's big into, she does rescue work at the at Bush Wildlife, which is a sanctuary here at Jupiter. So she does a lot of volunteer work for them as well.
Yeah, I volunteered for the Humane Society and, you know, just went through all the motions with them, helping them out. And it was so cool, you know. I mean, they go out, they catch the feral cats, they bring them in and neuter them, and they let them go back out and make sure they're all healthy and everything. It's pretty cool. I think everybody needs to volunteer and see, you know, see the process.
Absolutely. It, you know, and a lot of it is education, you know, which is a good thing about any of the sanctuaries or any of the rescue places. You know, one of the key things that they're doing is educating, you know, letting people know the abuse that goes on out there. You know, nobody really knows, you know, what's being done to these animals, you know, and it's good to give them an education.
What kind of animals do you have in your house?
Oh, right now, two cats. We're down to two cats. You know, over the course of the past 30 years, I can't tell you the menageries we've had, you know, from mice and fish and ferrets and rats and cats and dogs and you name it.
That's funny. And you have grandchildren, right?
Yeah, I got seven grandkids.
Wow, seven. You beat me. I got four. They're great, aren't they? They're awesome.
Oh, I love it. I you know, the old adage is true. You know, you can take them out and get them all sugared up and then, you know, drop them off at home.
That's right. Yeah, we've got identical twin girls, which they're a lot of fun.
That's nice.
They're so funny. Well, you got some tour. I've got some dates here for you. I'm sure this is going to expand, but you'll be in Las Vegas, I think, in March 22nd at the Golden Nugget. When is the cruise going to be? That's coming up soon too, right?
Yeah, it's just a couple of days later. It's on the 25th, I think, 25th, 26th, and then we're up in Portland, Oregon, for a couple of dates after that. So we're pretty busy, in the month of March. And, we've got, I think about 34 or 35 shows, you know, so far this year. We'll probably do 40 to 45, maybe even as many as 50.
You know, those cruises, man, they get sold out too fast. You know?
Immediately.
I want to take my wife on one, but it's like, you're kidding me. It's sold out already? And there's one, I think you got to book now for 2020. Are you guys going to be on the 2020 cruise, or you don't know yet?
Well, we haven't hit that yet, but you never know.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. You guys made some really cool album covers over the years. And Shining On was very unique because you had the 3D, bi-visual 3D glasses in the front. And you also did a quadraphonic mix of the album, also on 8-track. Whose idea was it to make that album? Was it Todd or was it...
What, to make that artwork?
Yeah, the artwork.
No, that was a publicist we had at the time. You know, they
really?
Came up with the idea of the 3D. You know, I think it was following a trend. I think there were other things going on with the 3D movies and that kind of stuff back then. You know, and there was a lot of talk about, you know, making, you know, 3D television and so forth and so on. So it was just kind of following that trend. And you know, usually a lot of the ideas that came up for the album covers came from the record company. You know, and it used to be a big competition between the artists and the record companies and so forth and so on. Come up with the most innovative way to use that space. You know, it was a great piece of space to have art.
Right.
And you know, which kind of went away when they went into CDs. You know, and now that whole art form is completely gone. But yeah, it was a terrific way to get one up on the other guy.
One of the weird album covers was Born to Die. What was that all about?
Well, the band was talking about breaking up. You know,
okay.
So it was, you know, the whole idea was we were born to die. You know, we were born in 1969 and we were going to die. That's what it was about.
And Survivor was a cool cover.
Survivor was pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Out in the Hollywood Hills we did that.
And then, of course, you had the naked photo with We're an American Band.
Yeah, I'm sitting on bales of hay, and that's never comfortable.
That took me by surprise. I remember buying that album and then opening it up and go, what? I'm sure the girls liked it, though.
It was fun to do. It was fun.
I looked at a lot of, you know, there's a lot of great footage on Grand Funk Railroad on YouTube, and there's a lot of, you know, like biography stuff and history stuff and whatever. And what one thing that I caught, which was really awesome, was when you guys were opening for Led Zeppelin, and Peter Grant got really pissed off because you guys were blowing Zeppelin off the stage, and he actually kicked you off the tour, right?
They kicked us off the tour. They kicked us off the stage. They pulled the power. You know, on the stage, you know, and he told Terry, our manager, you know, get that fucking band off the stage right now.
Yeah. That guy was very intimidating, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he was a good manager, you know, he really looked after Zeppelin, but, you know.
Well, I don't know, I wouldn't say so. I think he came out of that pretty well. I think he was a crook.
Oh, really?
That was part of the old rock and roll mafia back then, you know, Peter Grant and D. Anthony and Frank Barcelona and all these guys, you know, they were all tied in together and they were major ripoffs, you know. So I'm sure Led Zeppelin did okay, but Peter Grant did better.
Yeah, I talked to Tommy James about Morris Levy. Talk about a crook.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean,
it was a different time, you know, and things changed in the late 70s going into the 80s, you know, where the bands actually started getting more power and they hired better lawyers and they were more protected. But, you know, in the 60s and 70s, the record companies, the agents and the managers had all of the power. power, and they had all of the laws on their side, and the artists were, you know, kind of treated like peons.
Right.
So it did change. It all turned around. But we were victims, as well were, you know, many others. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard the story about Joe Cocker, where he went on the road with Mad Dogs and Englishmen, and at the end of the tour, which made millions and millions and millions of dollars, they gave him a check for $50,000. That's all he made on that whole tour.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. That is crazy. You know, and you guys, you didn't know better, because all you wanted to do is play music, and, you know, that was your love, you know. But I guess you know better now, don't you?
Well, you live and you learn, don't you?
I heard somewhere that you were also an attorney. Is that true?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No, I didn't make it through law school.
But you did go to law school?
I did go to law school.
Okay. I did hear something, and it was from another musician. Not Mark. It was somebody else. Somebody else from Detroit.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. What advice do you have for guys that, you know, want to get into music now? What do you think has changed? I know the you don't have the big record companies anymore. How can somebody get noticed nowadays? You can't do it on YouTube only. I heard you got a tour.
It's got to be internet related. I mean, there's no way to get out there and build a local following that's going to turn into a regional following that's going to turn into a nationwide following. There's just no way to do it, you know. And it's got to be internet based. And I still think the same principle applies that applied to us is that everybody's going to tell you no, you can't do it. And you have to be convinced that you can, and you have to be willing to sacrifice everything to get there.
Right.
And that's really what it takes. You have to be, you know, you have to be that person. And I think that still applies. You have to just, you know, say, I'm going to do this, and I'll give up everything to get it.
I keep hearing you got to be out there on the road. You got to play clubs, whatever it takes. You know, and that's...
Well, yeah, you have to be visible. You know, you definitely have to be visible. But everything's gone to internet. You know, radio is not going to be any help.
Nope.
And you know, you're never going to get any kind of television help. And so it all has to be internet-based.
You know, we need guys like you to guide and bring in new music, you know?
I mean, yeah, there you go.
we really do, you know? I always credit, I've had Todd Rundgren on the show a few times. He's a great guy. What was it like working with Todd on a professional?
I loved working with Todd.
Yeah?
I thought he made everything sound terrific in the headphones, you know, and it just made a whole different deal, you know, and Todd actually stayed at my house, you know, when we first started working on We're an American Band, and
right.
You know, and I went to visit him up in Woodstock, and you know, we actually played on an album that we did by Flint, the band named Flint,
right?
And Todd played on that album for us, and so yeah.
Yeah, he's a permanent fixture now with Ringo.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a new album out. He's got another new album out. Yeah, he's a good guy. I like talking to Todd. He's a, you know, very friendly guy. Guy from Philly. I got a couple more questions for you, and then we'll end this. What do you think your favorite Grand Funk Railroad album is?
You know, I think there's a couple of them. E Pluribus Funk is one of my favorite albums, and you know, actually the one we did with Frank Zappa, Good Singing, Good Playing, was another favorite of mine.
Yeah, that's a great album. What are you most excited about in your life right now?
You know, the grandkids, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's, yeah, absolutely.
I agree. And what are you most proud of, grandkids?
The grandkids. Yeah, I'm very proud of my daughter, and I'm very proud of the grandkids, for sure.
Any of your children into music?
Not really. You know, I think it could still happen with some of the grandkids. You know, we'll see as we go along. But no, we don't have anybody in music. My nephew has been involved. My sister was always involved in theater. And so my nephew kind of followed in her trip, her things. And she's and he's teaching now, teaching theater up in Oakland University in Michigan. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. How about your greatest challenge?
My greatest challenge, you know, has yet to come, I guess.
We'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, we'll find out.
And is there anything you would have done differently? Maybe not hire Terry?
Everything has happened for a reason. You know, in hindsight, you know, everything has happened for a reason. So I can't really say that I would change anything. I've had a great life. I can't say that I would, I'd go back and I, you know, gee, I would have done this different. Sure, if I would have known now what I, you know, if I would have known then what I know now, I would have done stuff different, but I didn't.
Yeah.
So, I'm not gonna wish I could change it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you guys bounced back. I mean, it was like a, you know, like a second coming of Grand Funk after Terry. You know, because you really got clobbered, man.
Yeah, no kidding.
It was terrible, but you know, you came out with some great songs after that, and you made up for everything.
And here we are, 50 years.
Yeah, 50. Can you believe that? 50 years, man. It's unbelievable.
50 years, and we're still going. And there's countless others that are not still going.
I know, or not here anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Hal Blaine had a good life. He was what, 90 years old? Great drummer.
Great drummer. Yeah.
Yeah. Don, here's your final question. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like in the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you met Jimi?
Briefly.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard he was a nice guy, carried his guitar everywhere, you know, kind of quiet. Yeah, good answer, man. Well, Don, one thing I really admire out of you is not only are you a great singer and songwriter, but how the hell can you sing and play drums at the same time? I admire that.
Well, if I would have learned how to sing after I started playing drums, that would have been tough. But I learned both at the same time, so it all came, you know, together at the same time. So that made it easier.
That's crazy. I don't know how you do it, and not many drummers do. You know, I always bring up Peter Rivera from Rare Earth because he's good at it. You know,
he's good at it.
Yeah, he's really good at it. Quick story about Peter. I asked him, you know, why does he close his eyes all the time? It's because at one gig, I don't know, it could have been the California Jam, he was tripping so much on acid that he couldn't open his eyes. And ever since that time, he always closes his eyes when he plays drums.
Okay.
Yeah. He's like us. He loves his he's got new grandkids too. He's happy.
Nice.
Don, do you have anything else you'd like to promote or chat about?
No, we're good, Ray. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Have a great tour. I hope you come to Florida. I know you live here in Florida, but I hope the band comes to Florida. And, you know, good luck with everything, man.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Don. For more information about Don Brewer and Grand Funk Railroad, visit www.grandfunkrailroad.com and also on Facebook, www.facebook.com/Grand Funk Railroad Music. Very special thanks to the wonderful Ann Layton of Media, Music Services, Motivation for arranging this interview with Don Brewer. And of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It is real news, people. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. There's a movie trailer about the book on YouTube. Just punch in Check the G's and Ray Shasho. You'll find it. Very interesting, very funny story about me growing up in a family business in Washington, D.C. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on PBS Radio, Station 1.